Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide, of course, to coaching cricket or playing cricket, improving your game or improving the game of others. Half an hour or so of cricket chat. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And coming along for the ride are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello there, Garris. Where are you?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Just off to Loughborough today, do a bit of level four spin bowling. So it's news to me that I know anything about spin, but hopefully I can add something to the course.
Yeah, you're going to have to introduce the Doosra to a couple of people.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. It wouldn't have been my choice, but Peter Sutchie knows a lot more than I do. He thought it was a good idea, so we'll see if he's still got the same opinion at about 6 o'clock.
Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hi, David. How are we doing?
Good, good. Big week for you?
Big week for me. I think it's quite a nice steady week for me, actually, this week. Not too much going on. It's a good time of year where I get to do a little bit of work outside of cricket, so a little bit of rugby going on, and that's been great fun to get involved in that. But cricket will be underway in about 10 days' time, so we're nearly at kick-off. Everything's planned, everything's in place, so just biding my time and making sure everything's ready to go, and then it'll be back on with it.
That gives me a good lead into the topic that I wanted to discuss before we got into other parts of the show this week, and that is the phrase which has come in recent years, which is environment. You know, what do people mean when they talk about having a good environment? Specifically, because, you know, it sounds great, but what does it actually mean? And also, what does that entail? How do you go about getting one? If you haven't got one, how do you go about getting one? And if you have got one, how do you go about maintaining it? Is there things that you can do, or is it one of those things that just happens of its own accord if you get the right people in place? What do you think?
I think it's down to hard work, because I've had sort of opportunities over the years to build a decent environment, and equally I've seen other people rescue environments that weren't very good, that then turn them round. But both of them take a lot of work, really, and the key thing for me is leadership, but also ownership within that as well. So leadership in that you need to have people at the top of a tree that are willing to go above and beyond, really, and set some stalls out for what they accept within that environment, what they think is going to be a strong environment. So they've got to lead that, they've got to be that, unless, you know, if you haven't got leaders that are capable of being what they are trying to get others to do, then you've got no chance. So that's the first point. And then secondly, from an ownership point of view, it's making sure that there's a connection with what the rest of the group want to do. Or if there is a shortfall between what the rest are going to do, then there's an education process that goes around it, because you can't just snap your fingers and expect everybody to follow. And these things generally take time. They're not an overnight thing by any stretch of the imagination. But they do require a heck of a lot of work. But to me, leadership is the starting point for it. And whether that's a captain and a coach or a combination of the two, which we often see within cricket, it's rare that it isn't the combination of the two, then all of a sudden you start to see the good things happening.
And Lavers, what do you think about environments? Is it one of those phrases which sounds good but it's hard to pin down? Or are you clear in the teams that you coach with, are you clear what you're driving towards when you're thinking about building a good environment?
Yeah, I think, again, as with a lot of things you'll do, you'll have different expectations of what you want to achieve given the group. And as you said, sometimes you can walk into a group and the group has creates an environment automatically because of the personalities it has within it. And other times, then there's a hell of a lot of hard work to get done, and it's not quite so easy. It doesn't just fall into place for you. So, for me, one of the things that I've done, and actually a really good group that I've got, which is relating it away from cricket, is the rugby group I look after, which is immense fun, but also really good for me to focus on the environment side of it, because my knowledge and skills on the rugby side wouldn't be anywhere near as strong as on the cricket side. So preparing the environment and making sure that standards are being set there's leadership in place from myself and from my senior players. One of the key phrases that we've used is the standard that you walk past is the standard you accept. And after a couple of weeks, I realised the boys still didn't know what this means. So we kind of sat down and explained it, and they realised that what it means is if you've got people in your group or in your team or in your squad, then whatever standard they're willing to set is going to represent you and it's going to represent everyone. So it means that it's not just me setting a standard and me trying to discipline a standard, but it's the whole group. Because if you're accepting that the person who's going to stand next to you is going to not try as hard or is going to do a simple thing to a lower standard or to a lower effort level, then you're accepting it unless you do something about it. And that's been something that has really sunk in, and that's built an environment sort of almost independently of me, because they've taken the ownership of that group, they've taken the ownership of the standards that they believe in, and subsequently they've been fantastic. So something that needs to be led from the top, but it can be kind of policed and managed and nurtured from the players themselves, if you have the right approach to it, and probably if you have the right people in the group, because it won't always work that easily.
And I was going to ask you about people, really. How important is it to have people who do all buy into that idea of a group agreement on things? And what happens?
I think it's important to have that, but you're not always going to have that. And one of the teams that we've got at school, I don't work with directly, so Dan Hellesvay has worked with that group. And we got to half term last year, and they're a very talented group. They've got a couple of very good players in there, but they didn't necessarily have a number of leaders or a number of people that were all pulling in the same direction. So Dan took a decision, which I backed wholly, to send an email to the parents just outlining the way that the second half of the term was going to go, you know, the next 4 weeks was going to go. And he put down five or six things, and it actually ruffled a few feathers amongst parents, because their little kiddies were being told, effectively, as we'd told them, but they were being told about their kids, that they weren't necessarily being decent team players, they weren't supporting well enough, they weren't offering enough views and then going away and having their little corridor conversations. And basically we got a completely honest environment within that under 15 side for the last 4 weeks of the year. And all of a sudden, the performances of the people, but more importantly, the behaviours of the people within the group started to change a little bit. And we started to see progress. Now, the team had been successful most of the year anyway, so they were a good side. So it wasn't about whether you're going to get more wins or not. It was just getting some good behaviours, people being honest with each other, people working hard for themselves, but also for each other. And then ultimately having a bit of fun through that joint experience. And we started to see change just before we broke up. And Dan's team got through the regional under 15 bit of a tournament, got into the national finals. And the interesting thing for me was that we got back together 8 weeks later for the national final. And Dan and myself, I reckon, had the easiest ride ever as a pair of coaches at a national finals day. Because ultimately, the team completely ran itself. All we did, I did the scorebook, and Dan made sure that everybody was there on time. And that was pretty much it. And they played brilliantly. They played as a wonderful team. We had a heap of parents coming up over the course of a day just going, look at how they've developed. And these were the same parents that a few of them were saying that you've gone about it in completely the wrong way. So Dan led that from the front. There weren't enough leaders in that group when we started that process only a few weeks beforehand. And yet by the time they won that National Cup, you had leaders pretty much all over the pitch, at least five or six that were very evident in the way that they were driving behaviours within that group. And all of a sudden, they went from being a group that were a bit awkward to coach, were never going to reach their potential, but had talent in the group, to a team that actually will look back really fondly on their 2 years together playing cricket at school.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with just a couple of items that have been in the news over the last week for Pitch Vision. It's that the FP Elite Cricket Academy in Cape Town have broken two world records with Pitch Vision there, tracking the deliveries on Pitch Vision. Damien Fuller batted in a net at the Academy in Cape Town for 55 hours, unbelievably 55 hours. And Faye Tunnicliffe, also of the Academy, set the first ever women's record for the longest net, which was 30 hours. So congratulations to both Damien and Faye for such an epic feat of stamina. Secondly, there's some Pitch Vision news, is that, of course, as you probably already know, Pitch Vision is the official technology and coach education partner of Cricket South Africa. And as part of that, Cricket South Africa are rolling out 20 PV1 systems as part of their talent identification program
for the question section on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show.
A couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show, or maybe readers, to the Pitch Vision website over at pitchvision.com. And we do our best to answer those questions. And whether we get our answers right or not, then we pick the best question of the week that wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Raj has sent in the first question. And Raj says, our team has struggled to bat out time in 50-over games for 5 seasons in a row. We've tried everything. Please help. 5 seasons, that's quite a problematic situation that they've got there.
Well, it's a problem that is pretty common, I think, because 300 balls is a long time, isn't it? And certainly it's a problem that my under-14s had a little bit last year. We basically would win any game that we didn't get bowled out in. And other games that we lost because we didn't bat long enough. It was pretty much the... So I'm searching for the same answers, I suppose, which is good. I mean, for first thing you've got to ask yourself is, have you got the right players in the team? And obviously most people, unless you're a national group of selectors or an IPL selector or whatever the case may be, most people have got a limited number of resources that they can draw upon. I certainly have at school. So, you know, if I can't pull anybody in or find anybody new that could do the job, then I've got to look possibly at redeployment of roles. And Sam talks about roles a lot on the show. And I think it's something that I've taken from him. And I'm certainly looking for this year, when I coach that same group of players, to look to enhance people's responsibility and who maybe didn't get the option of batting up the order, and seeing if they had the propensity and the concentration to be able to bat for longer while scoring runs out in the middle. So redeployment is something that I think can work, because often, you know, you look at the England team at the moment, they're searching to find the right batting order and the right people to go into certain slots. And they've got somebody like Joss Butler, who presently sits outside of the group. Now, there's no denying that Joss Butler is a fantastic batter and hasn't quite hit his straps in Test match cricket. But if he's given a slightly different role, which I believe that he's likely to have in the Test series down in Bangladesh, then you never know what's going to happen, and he might take to it, whether that be a combination of keeping wicket or batting, whether it be batting in a higher position he would do if he was just keeping wicket as well. But having a different role, not just in number but also the way you go about it, can often kickstart somebody to do something a little bit differently. So that would be my starting point. And then we can go on to how you organise your practice, how you put in consequence, how you simulate longer format cricket, which for most of us, 50 over cricket would be the longest format that most people were playing. And it is, as I say, a long time with 300 balls. But first point of call, have you got the right people on the bus? That would be the first thing. And secondly, have you got them in the right order with the right roles? And that's certainly where I'm looking for my first port of call when I attack this very same problem with my team in 2017.
It can be, I think, sometimes a thought that the priority becomes to bat through the innings, and then people become afraid of getting out, can't they, Levers? I've definitely seen that happening. People become sort of, they go into their shell almost, and they lose the fact that, you know, the point of batting is to score runs. And they go, well, as long as we bat through 50 overs, we'll be all right. And then you end up not doing either, because, you know, you stop playing cricket, you stop batting, and you start thinking about just surviving.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a couple of ways to look at this. One thing, especially in the way he's worded it, he feels like the struggle is clearly to bat out the 50 overs, but what we're not looking to do is change the saving part of the innings. It's presumably the problem is up front, and the problem is the top 4 or 5 or 6 wickets that are going, and then it's that hanging on period afterward, which is what you're looking to develop. But really, we want to stop the top 4 or 5 losing, don't we? So we want to make sure that we can adapt, as Gareth said, either the personnel or the batting order or whatever it might be to be a little bit more effective in the way that we bat at the top of the order, or adapt the shots that they're playing potentially. But if you do go into your shell, like you said, you can very quickly find that where normally, and if it was a Josh Butler, for instance, if he was coming in at number 3 or 4, which he has done for Lancs in the past, and it might be an ongoing thing that he does for England in the future, but if you have a Josh Butler in who sets a positive outlook on how he's going to play and goes out and does play his shots and looks to take the game to the opposition, when he does nick one through third slip, you generally find the third slip isn't there. Whereas if you are sitting prodding the ball around like I would have done for years and just trying to nudge it around and scamper the odd single, then suddenly you get one on the shoulder of the bat, it goes through fourth, and lo and behold, they've got a full slip because they don't need a cover or an extra cover or a mid-wicket. So they say you make your own luck, but it's not really a luck thing there. It's you make your own fields. You impose yourself on the opposition in your own way, and subsequently they will respond to the way that you do that. So, you can try and fight your way out of it by looking at that hanging on and how can we defend better and how can we do these things. But also, can you flip the coin a little bit and go the other way and say how can we reduce the chances being taken? Can we do that by hitting more boundaries? Can we do that by running between the wickets better and frustrating them? Can we do that by playing more positive cricket? So, yeah, more than one way to approach it, I would say there.
Yeah, it's about trying to be in control of the game, isn't it? Rather than be concerned about, you know, the ultimate victory is if we bat through to 50 overs. Actually, that's not the ultimate victory. The ultimate victory is, have we scored as many runs as we are potentially capable of scoring?
Well, that is the question, isn't it? Is not how many overs do we bat for? It is how do we get enough runs to win the game? And if you only bat for 35 overs, but you've got your 350 on the board already, and that's enough to win the game, then happy days, you've won the game. And that's kind of, we can get caught up in, oh, we should be doing this or should be doing that. Ultimately, what we're looking to do would be score more runs than the opposition in a straight 50-50 game. So just be mindful about what we're trying to do, and the priority still here isn't going to be getting to 49.5 overs and we're only 8 down. The priority here is going to be getting to a figure that is relevant to the opposition you're playing against, the conditions you're playing in, etc. So blocking it all together might be a little bit of looking at the situation the wrong way around. However, it's obviously 5 years on the bounce, it being an ongoing struggle, you can see there's a bit of an awareness that it is a problem. It's just how you get out of it, and there's more than one way to get out of it, is what we're saying.
Right, next question is from Virat, and Virat sent a picture in as well, so I can put that into the show notes. But he says, I have a problem with my stance and grip. When I stand in my stance, I feel very uncomfortable. So what should I do?
Well, thanks for the pictures, first and foremost. That really is useful. Although I'd say probably from an angle point of view, it's not the most optimal angle for us to make assessments. I mean, ideally, we'd like a square on, side on angle and one straight down the pitch. But, you know, we've got quite a lot of information to deal with here. And, you know, it looks like a pretty good stance, actually. But you're reporting back that you're uncomfortable with it. And comfort's huge, isn't it, when you're batting, and particularly going back to the last question of trying to bat a length of time, whether, you know, it's a test match or whatever, you want to be comfortable for the time that you're at the wicket. And it was something that Graham Gooch used to really instill within his batters at Essex and then with England, was unless you're actually comfortable standing out there, then the chances of you being able to play a match winning innings over any length of time is pretty limited. So, and I'm a big believer on that. Now, fantastically, if you looked at Gucci's batting stance himself, and we tried to replicate that batting stance, we'd probably find that to be really uncomfortable, because it used to look like he'd turn his head and tuck his chin into his neck. But there was a reason why he did that, and one of the reasons why he did that was the fact that the eye that he wanted to be doing most of the watching of motion, i.e. the ball coming to him, was his right eye. And I reckon you're right-eyed as well in the way that you stand, and that discomfort is coming from your batting stance being completely parallel and your hips and your shoulders being completely parallel, but then you're trying to get your right eye to have a good view of the ball, which means that you're having to pull your head around, and that's probably where you're finding that discomfort across your neck, across your shoulders, maybe through your spine into your hips, which is often where the place that people report that. So if I was coaching you, I would experiment, and this, you know, I can't say from that pitch of it this will definitely work, but I'd certainly want to give it a go of just opening up the angle of that front foot a little bit, so you're realigning your hips slightly and your shoulders slightly, which will naturally enable that right eye to come around a little bit and fall into a position where it can watch the ball, the incoming bowler and the incoming ball better. I'm not saying you do a Nick Compton and turn your head round like right, completely right eyed. That isn't where I'm going with this. It's just to give yourself a better view of the ball in a more comfortable stance, because if we're in a more comfortable stance that is working for us, then the chances of us picking up line and length and then moving effectively to a point of contact are going to be increased.
Leivis, what do you recommend? You get someone who's reporting feeling uncomfortable. How do you go about it?
I guess you want to pinpoint where that discomfort is, don't you, and try and identify what the cause could be for the discomfort that's being felt. And one of the things I did identify, and obviously it looks like a good stance. It looks like it could be comfortable for someone, but it's not necessarily comfortable for him. One of the things I did notice was that front foot looks like it's a little bit closed off, doesn't it? And it's probably pointing to backward point rather than square in front of square, and being associated, as Gareth has said, with those hip, shoulders, and head, which are very much in a neutral starting position. That's the one place that you could find a little bit of discomfort. Now, with any individual, yes, you can have someone come and tell you what is going to work better for you, but a lot of work you can do with your stance can be done by trial and error, really. Just try and, if that is uncomfortable, try and find somewhere that is comfortable. And then once you've done that, you can look at that position and say, right, what are the pros or the cons of this position that's more comfortable? And you might find that there are a few sort of arguments on both sides, and the uncomfortable position allows you to do X, Y, and Z and bring the bat down straight and potentially get close to the ball or whatever it might be, whereas the comfortable position takes less energy out of you and allows you to do some things well, but still has its drawbacks. So it's going to be a case of swings and roundabouts, really, and it's making sure that you can have a logical decision on what you want to do and something that's going to be of benefit to you. I would like to think if you're going to do something that's going to last any period of time and you're going to do something that's going to allow you to bat for a significant innings, which we do thinking 70, 80, 90, 100 balls plus, then that comfort element has got to be there just to avoid exhaustion, really. So finding something that does tick the basic boxes that we want in terms of how you view the ball and how you can move towards a ball, but also ticks that box of an element of comfort is key. And just experiment with it by thinking about these things. How do you set your feet up? How do you set your hips up? How do you set your shoulders? How do you grip the bat? And you haven't mentioned your grip isn't that comfortable again there. So again, you can play around with that. As long as the bat's being presented in the same way by the time it makes contact or it's presenting a full face, then you should be fine again. So have a little play around with it. Don't think that there's a right answer or a wrong answer. You've seen enough of Test cricket and international cricket to realise that people are different. So play around with your options and see what feels good to you, and then see if it actually translates into being able to hit a ball cleanly.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we go, we do need to decide on the winner of that competition. The online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com is up for grabs. And the two people in the running to win it is Raj and his question about his team getting bowled out, and Virat's question about his stance. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Again, two great questions, but I'm going to go with Virat. So I think it's a really relevant point. You've got to be comfortable when you bat. You know, if you're going to do anything over any length of time, as we discussed, it's important. So, yeah, Virat, it's all yours.
Congratulations, Virat. And, Gareth, if someone else was listening to this who wasn't Virat and they were thinking they would like their question answered and also have the chance to win that prize, how can they get in touch with you?
They can give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Yeah, you can also find us, you can follow us on the Pitch Vision social media system. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. Or you can go over to Twitter and find us there at Pitch Vision Acad. You can also listen to the show every week. You can get the Pitch Vision app, listen to it there, or go into your favourite podcast app, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and tap on the subscribe button. That's all completely free. You can also go to the Pitch Vision website and stream the show online there, or download the show, get the show notes, all the rest of it. That's at pitchvision.com/academy, and click on the podcast link for all the details. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys. Bye.